This is
Taking Aim
with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. We're so glad to be with you here in the morning. We have been broadcasting for, this is our eighth year, and we broadcast every Tuesday between 5 and 6 p.m. with hard-hitting analysis, political commentary, very riveting programming, as many of you know. But for those of you who aren't used to Taking Aim, we're going to present a portion, a small portion, of an extensive series that we did on the collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital. This is an important series. Many people have contacted us, and WBAI thought that this was appropriate for the current fund drive. It's a $100 contribution, a donation to WBAI, and this will be a four CD set for you, three or four CD set. It's 212-209-2950, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. Part two, the first part is an introduction, and part two is the specter of systematic collapse. Part three, regulatory charade, a new crisis in the making, and part four, the depth of the assault on working people. Let's look at what was taking place and is still taking place around the world. On March 14, 2008, Bear Stearns, which is the fifth largest investment house in the United States, announced that it was on the verge of collapse. Excuse me, that was on Thursday, March 13th. Bear Stearns, according to Ben Bernanke, the Fed chairman, told Congress that Bear Stearns had advised the Federal Reserve and other government agencies that its liquidity position has significantly deteriorated, this is a mild way of putting it, and that it would have to file for Chapter 11 bankruptcy the next day unless alternative sources of funds became available. In other words, Bear Stearns was on the verge of collapse, and this was a crash that financial pundits and also regulators such as Ben Bernanke thought would create such a crash that it would be on the scale of the Great Depression. For over 3 days, the U.S. Federal Reserve, along with the Treasury Department and one of the biggest banks, J.P. Morgan Chase, worked round the clock to put together a rescue package. They needed a solution before the Asian markets opened on Monday, March 17th. And what this package was and the implications of it, this is unprecedented since the days of the Great Depression, what this package was is discussed in this series. But not only that, we discussed the entire crisis of fictive capital. That is the funny money, the speculation of the derivatives market, and what it means for you and me. That is the depth of the assault on working people. Across the country, 1 million homes have been seized by banks and other financial institutions that provide mortgages. And this is only a tip of the iceberg. Ralph?
$514 trillion, that's what Bear Stearns' collapse revealed. $514 trillion in derivatives and in speculation on paper that is grounded in virtually nothing, a house of cards, brothers and sisters. It's called leveraging, it's called hedge funding. What it entails is putting a fraction of actual money as a base or a collateral for paper speculation that is then traded and speculated upon even in even greater volume. Bloomberg's news service published an article which disclosed that there is a record $33 trillion of U.S. debt mounting daily. And I'll just give a quick quote about this from Bloomberg, brothers and sisters. Right now, a block east of Times Square, the national debt clock is ticking $19,000 per second, $1.1 million per minute, $66 million per hour. Perched above the Avenue of the Americas in Midtown Manhattan, the green electronic billboard is tallying the second-by-second growth of U.S. government debt. And these days, it's running faster than ever. Now, on October 9th of last year, we were over $7 trillion, 22 times the stock market value of Microsoft, what is involved here, brothers and sisters, is a crisis that is so systemic it cannot be resolved. And we go through this meticulously, make it clear, explainable, with all of the political implications in this important series.
212-209-2950, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. We have a treat for you. We're going to play the first half hour of the first CD in the series, more during the weeks to come, but this will only be portions. This is a highly edited presentation of The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. Hold on to your seats and let's get rolling.
Panic is old hat on Wall Street, wrote James Grant in the Washington Post on Sunday, March 16th. Rarely before, however, has there been a crisis so comprehensive as this one. On Friday, March 14th, invoking a little-used provision that had been added to the Federal Reserve Act in 1932 at the height of the Great Depression, the Federal Reserve Bank of New York decided to infuse credit to Bear Stearns. But because Bear Stearns is not a depository bank of the Federal Reserve, the money was going to go through J.P. Morgan Chase. J.P. Morgan Chase, a mammoth $1.6 trillion bank that operates in more than 60 countries. Under the terms of this secured loan facility, the Federal Reserve would be able to extend credit for up to 28 days. The risk of a default by Bear Stearns would be borne by the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, not by J.P. Morgan Chase. In other words, J.P. Morgan Chase, the mammoth banking institution, was only going to be a conduit for cash provided by the U.S. Central Bank. How unusual. Why was this taking place? Bear Stearns, founded in 1923, 15,500 employees, $300 billion on its balance sheet, the fifth largest investment bank in the United States, the second largest underwriter of mortgage bonds. Bear Stearns, with its imposing Madison Avenue headquarters, which in itself is worth between $800 million and $1 billion. Bear Stearns, a stalwart of the financial institutions of the United States, couldn't meet its credit obligations. An incredible crisis hitting the financial institutions of the United States. No longer mortgage crisis with the subprime mortgage lenders like Countrywide failing and taken over by Bank of America. As Alan Greenspan, the former Federal Reserve chief, wrote in the Financial Times, March 16th, the current financial crisis in the United States is likely to be judged in retrospect as the most wrenching since the end of the Second World War. Today on Taking Aim, we will discuss in more detail the collapse of Bear Stearns and what it means. What is the crisis of fictive capital? Ralph?
For those of our listeners, brothers and sisters, who have been paying attention to what we have been trying to say over a space of 7 years, we have attempted to show and to discuss the abiding crisis of capitalism as an economic and political and social order. Because long ago, capitalism had ceased to be capable of advancing what are called productive forces in society. Long ago, capitalism had become dependent upon deficit financing, upon waste production such as the addiction to arms, upon constant speculation on pieces of paper against which monies are lent that bear no resemblance to the actual collateral that is sustaining those loans, with speculation upon speculation, what is called fictive capital, a house of cards waiting for its collapse. Here now we have the abiding analysis of socialists and of Marxists sustained by the actual mouthpieces of capital in all their main organs, the Financial Times, the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian of London, the London Times, the U.S. News and World Report, Fortune magazine, Business Week, all sustaining a critique that is essentially one of Marxism without the name.
And Ralph, when we have the collapse of Bear Stearns and the intervention of the federal government that was announced on Friday, that wasn't sufficient. The Federal Reserve, despite dramatic actions on multiple fronts to avert a crisis of what it considered was going to be a crisis of the global financial system, decided that it wasn't sufficient to just fund Bear Stearns to supply the credit to let it meet its obligations. And over the weekend, there were marathon negotiations in New York and Washington, and a decision was made that J.P. Morgan Chase, the major Wall Street bank, would buy Bear Stearns for a bargain basement price, paying $2 a share for an institution that plays a central role in executing financial transactions. Now, this was 3.5% of what the Bear Stearns stock had been on Thursday before this decision was made, but it was only 2.5% of the value of what Bear Stearns was on Valentine's Day in February.
98% of the value of one of the most important financial and speculative and stockbrokering institutions of capitalist society, 98% of its value disappearing overnight, handed over to J.P. Morgan Chase, the 14,000 employees of Bear Stearns who were investors in Bear Stearns, losing everything that they have, is classic with capitalism. A Bear Stearns market, says James Grant. Panic is old hat on Wall Street, he begins his analysis. However, rarely has there been a crisis so comprehensive as this one. Has he merely engaged in rhetoric? He continues, it first materialized last summer in the shape of a disturbance in the low-rated or subprime mortgage market. Contained, the regulatory establishment hopefully pronounced, but in fact it has blazed across markets and time zones with central bankers, politicians, and treasury functionaries in hot and futile pursuit, he writes. What makes this proceeding so frightening is that not only is credit in crisis, but so too is money. The well-founded doubts about the promises to pay money and the nature and integrity of the dollar at stake are in question. And so on Friday, the Federal Reserve committed to lend undisclosed billions to bail out Bear Stearns, a top Wall Street purveyor of mortgage-backed securities and the leading lender to hedge funds. But where will, James Grant writes in the Washington Post, where will the Fed find these dollars? Where it always does. It has to print them. Despite, he writes, the abundant evidence from the currency and gold markets that the world has about all the dollar bills it cares to hold. In short, the dollar is virtually worthless. The dollar is without standing. The dollar is compromised by deficit. The dollar bears no relation to real value. It is an artificial construct today, brothers and sisters, and the global economy is predicated upon a phantom.
Ralph, J.P. Morgan Chase, this major institution, $1.5 trillion of assets, operating in more than 60 countries, J.P. Morgan Chase didn't become this behemoth by making stupid investment decisions. It was going to get this venerable, also venerable institution, Bear Stearns. But J.P. Morgan Chase said, hey, federal government, Federal Reserve, we don't want to take on the risk of the speculative investments. So the Federal Reserve said, J.P. Morgan Chase, do us a favor. You'll take over all the great assets of Bear Stearns, and we will take on the risk of the $30 billion worth of the speculative mortgage-backed investments.
In short, it's what David Stockman called so succinctly the corporate soup line. The same corporate soup line that sees the federal government subsidizing all the major sectors of capitalist industry in the United States. Not only are they not paying taxes, but they receive outright government subsidies, which are virtual looting of the treasury. And then the analysis with respect to Bear Stearns by the financial analyst of the Washington Post, James Grant. By the look of things, he writes, America's surfeited creditors must make room for many billions more. It says, the markets are in uncharted waters. Robert Rubin, chairman of the Citigroup Executive Committee, urged the government to exert itself on behalf of the mortgage market. And Grant writes, who are these bankers who went sailing off the end of the earth and thereby find it necessary to pass the cup to the government? The company of errant, lavishly compensated navigators includes none other than Robert Rubin himself. Now, Robert Rubin is not only chairman of the Citigroup Executive Committee, he was Bill Clinton's, what was he, Secretary of Treasury or Secretary of Commerce, Maya?
Treasury.
Last fall, the former Treasury Secretary confessed to Fortune magazine. Grant writes that until the mortgage storms broke over his head in the summer of 2007, he was, quote, unfamiliar with the complex mortgage structures with which Citigroup's own balance sheet was packed. Almost certainly, the gulf between competence and compensation on Wall Street has never been wider, writes James Grant. These are fraudulent individuals with the color of authority presiding over a house of cards, enriching themselves and their cronies in the process, and abundantly incompetent and indifferent to the consequences. These lapses in mortgage underwriting are justly called, Grant stated, the greatest failure of ratings and risk management ever, unquote. Mortgages are far from the only blighted department of credit. The same carefree lending standards that led to record high home foreclosures has brought deepening troubles in the market for loans to highly indebted companies. The no-document, interest-only, no-money-down mortgage is a kind of universal American business model. In other words, hand them the cash, milk the public, stick the homeowner, and hand out the cash to the speculators, the executives, the captains of capital. What does Grant state? It wouldn't be so bad if the United States were not the issuer of the world's reserve currency. The dollar is not only America's script, it is the store of value and the medium of exchange in Asia, South America, and the Middle East. And yet here's the rub. The Federal Reserve makes monetary policy for one country only. This is a critique which is devastating in its implications. He ends this article, and it's a long article. It is a pickle for the ages, not one without its compensations. The falling prices in Wall Street are beginning to restore a semblance of value to stocks and bonds, but the plunging dollar prompts a serious reexamination of worldwide monetary arrangements, which is a polite way of saying the system is in terminal decay.
Ralph, it's interesting how quickly this is escalating. The subprime crisis began 1 year ago, and it is 2 weeks ago, February 27th, that Ben Bernanke, the head of the Fed, appeared before the Financial Services Committee of the House of Representatives, and this is before the Senate Banking Committee. And this was to deliver the Federal Reserve semi-annual report to Congress. He believed at the time, he said, that the U.S. could avert a recession. Now, he said this, Bernanke said this, but the Wall Street Journal, New York Times, Financial Times, everyone says the U.S. is headed into a deep recession. So I don't know where Bernanke gets his analysis. But even though he said there wouldn't be a recession and there wouldn't be a crisis, he painted a grim picture of the economy that's reeling from a housing collapse, a credit and banking collapse, a slowdown in consumer spending, growing unemployment, 63,000 announced as being employed in the last report. This is just in a monthly report. There are hundreds of thousands who are filing unemployment. There's virtually zero economic growth by capitalist standards of measuring growth. And there's accelerating inflation, a weakening dollar, and as everyone can see, the basket of goods, the consumer basket of goods, what we purchase, the prices are going up. And that's what they mean by inflation. It costs more to live. Just look at the price of oil, from $20 a barrel to over $100 a barrel. So he said this on February 27th. What was the reaction of President Bush and the Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson? On February 28th, Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson, who was then seconded by President Bush at his Thursday press conference, February 28th, they rejected all proposals that were being worked out between the Wall Street banks and the Congress, the Democratic Party-led Congress, for a government-funded bailout of mortgage lenders, banks, and financial institutions that were holding tens of billions of dollars in bad investments linked to these subprime and other shaky mortgages. So 2 weeks ago, the government was saying, we will not step in. 2 weeks later, not only is there a massive bailout of Bear Stearns, it is announced that there's a massive bailout of all these banking institutions. Ralph?
Maya, once again, let's return to the financial pundits of the capitalist press. Here's the International Herald Tribune on March 11th, and Reuters correspondent James Saft is the analyst. In the United States, the economy and banking are pushing each other downhill, is the headline. Should we be more worried about the new crisis coming to a head in the financial system? Or that the United States is self-evidently in recession? Sadly, we don't have to choose. Banks starved of capital are calling in their debts, turning clients, notably hedge funds, into forced sellers as large swathes of the financial markets are caught in a vicious cycle of margin calls, fire sales, and further price collapses. The United States Federal Reserve has tried to break the cycle again by offering an additional $200 billion to the banks on easier terms and for longer, but confidence in its ability to succeed has fallen. Meanwhile, in the real world, he writes, consumers and company managers have gotten the message and are firing each other as providers of goods and services and wage-earning employees. The payroll data of the United States is grim indeed. Their retail and consumption figures are hardly encouraging. The Fed's effort to isolate the effects of the financial crunch from the real economy have clearly failed, said Lena Komaleva, an economist at the brokerage firm Tulet Prebon in London. We are now seeing the materialization of this new relationship between the financial and the real economy, where both are now in profound crisis, unquote. In essence, Saft writes, the negative feedback loop that the Fed fears with banking and the economy pushing one another downhill has taken hold. Payrolls fell by 63,000 in February, falling for the second consecutive month, the most in over 5 years. Banks have become even more unwilling to take risks with capital. They are asking borrowers to post more collateral against loans, even when these loans are used to finance investment in supposedly safe instruments like treasury securities or mortgage bonds backed by Fannie Mae or Freddie Mac. And what he writes in his extraordinary acknowledgement of the crisis, he says, prices for corporate debt and mortgages are at levels that imply a depression, not just a recession. There is no good reason to expect these prices to improve in the near term, whether or not you are of the view that 1929 is at hand. And he writes, the banks will get some of the $1 trillion, but not most, meaning that mortgage debt and housing have a lot further to fall. The impact of all this on the economy and the impact of this economic downturn will result on the banks, which is, in a word, scary, unquote.
I want to go in more detail into something you were mentioning about the Federal Reserve loaning up to $200 billion to the investment banks. These are the Wall Street investment banks, not necessarily depository banks such as Bank of America or Citigroup
or J.P. Morgan Chase,
are the traditional banks.
Mm-hmm.
And this $200 billion is among its $700 billion stash of treasury bonds. And what it's going to do with this $200 billion is, in effect, it's going to vouch for the credit worthiness of mortgage-backed assets. That is the compilation of mortgages that these mortgage companies and investment banks pull together. And then they use that as an instrument for trading. They're going to vouch for this the credit worthiness of these mortgage-backed assets that don't really have much market value. In other words, nobody wants them because many of the mortgages that are pooled together, they've been foreclosed, these houses, and the mortgages don't have value. There's a collapse in the U.S. home sales and prices. There's almost a million homes that are vacant, or new homes plus homes that to be resold, you know, that have been occupied before. And these mortgage securities would have been written off as losses by the finance houses. So instead of their having to write off losses, which they've been doing for the past year, over almost $100 billion of losses among the many banks, both U.S. and international, instead of writing them off as losses, the Fed is coming in and propping them up and saying, you don't have to write them up as losses. We'll back them with $200 billion. This is the first time this is actually taking place. It's the most massive debt relief plan for Wall Street that has ever been instituted. And as you say, it really reveals a very deep crisis of capitalism.
Well, Maya, the analysts of the capitalist press are extremely clear about this. The headline in the New York Times on March 14th, Economy Hammered by Toxic Blend of Ailments by Vikas Bajaj. Everything is going wrong for the American economy at once. People are buying less. Most things are costing more. Mortgage rates are rising. The dollar is falling. Prices of key commodities like oil are leaping from one record high to the next. On Thursday, the dollar plumbed to new lows against the Japanese yen and other major currencies. The price of an ounce of gold jumped above $1,000 for the first time, and lenders have raised home loan rates once again. Government figures show retail sales fell in February. Consumers are cutting back on cars, furniture, electronics. Stocks have fallen sharply after the retail sales report. A large investment fund says it is nearing collapse. The volatility that has defined the market continues unabated. A toxic blend of economic and financial developments is testing policymakers and lawmakers who are struggling to contain a slump brought on by the collapse of the mortgage market, a downturn that is sure to push the economy into deep recession. Current conditions are a far cry from 1970s. Resurgent inflation is raising the threat of stagflation, a condition in which unemployment and the price of goods and services both rise. And he continues, the credit markets began to seize up in August, and the steps taken by the Federal Reserve and the rest of the federal government bolster stocks briefly, but have done little to stem the larger downward drift. And he continues, the stocks and bonds will decline. The dollar will keep falling until the weaker exchange rate increases American exports. And then he says the following. The fall of the dollar has contributed to the surge in commodity prices, oil, foodstuffs, and many other raw materials priced in dollars. And as the currency falls in value, suppliers of these commodities demand higher prices just to keep pace, just to stay even. The weakness of the dollar explains why oil prices jumped $23 a barrel in 6 weeks alone. Oil futures touched $111 a barrel for the first time and settled at $110 on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Gold prices surged past $1,000 a troy ounce. Where do we go? Said John Kilduff, Senior Vice President for Energy and MF Global in New York. Where can investors go? They are fleeing the dollar. They are seeking out hard assets like commodities, and it's pushing up oil prices. This is an abiding self-perpetuating crisis, brothers and sisters. The analyst in the New York Times writes, we are nearing levels where it is not a great thing for the dollar to keep weakening, said David Gilmore, the partner at Foreign Exchange Analytics in Essex, Connecticut. And yet, the Fed is doing precisely that. By bailing out the banks, by slicing interest rates, they are weakening the dollar even more and exacerbating the rise in commodity prices and the inability of the people of the United States to afford food, to afford housing, to afford fuel oil, to afford gasoline, to afford to live. This is a deep, continuing, structural, abiding crisis as the house of cards of fictive capital is in a rapid process of collapse.
And the financial journals, such as the Wall Street Journal, understand this. Commenting on the discussions that took place between the Fed chairman, Ben Bernanke, the other Fed governors, and Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson and Undersecretary Robert Steele that took place over the weekend, the decision that J.P. Morgan Chase would actually buy Bear Stearns. The Wall Street Journal noted, quote, if they allowed Bear to fail, the rest of Wall Street could have been dragged down with it. A major financial institution would have gone from being worth $8 billion to worthless overnight. And this would have created a freeze on lending. In other words, the banks and the financial institutions.
This is Taking Aim with
Rob Schoen
and Maya Schoen. You've been listening to the first part of our hard-hitting series, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. This is our gift to you for your contribution of $100 to WBAI, our incredible, long-living and hope-to-be, long, still in the future radio station, here for you and me 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 212-209-2950. I don't have to tell you, listeners here in the morning, about the worth of WBAI. And I don't think I can tell you much more after listening to this segment about this four-part series, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. What I can say is that the story gets deeper and deeper throughout the series as we peel away the layers of the onion. The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, our gift to you for your contribution. I want to hear the phones ringing, ringing and ringing. We're going to be on again from 5 to 6, but now let's get the show on the road. Part 2 of the series deals with the specter of systemic collapse, that is, throughout the world. Part 3, the regulatory charade, a new crisis in the making. And Part 4, the depth of the assault on working people. The financial markets have lost past year $1.55 trillion of value, $1.5 trillion, and this is with the U.S. markets and U.S. investment houses losing over $100 billion, and some say it's going to go up to $400 to $600 billion worldwide, based upon their subprime mortgages, their commercial property mortgages, their junk bonds, their leveraged buyout loans, and on and on, a whole panoply of funny money, derivative, these are speculative devices, as well as actual mortgages on homes. People who can no longer, because of the collapse of the economy and the fact that they bought these, they arranged mortgages that are tied to interest rates, and interest rates went up, the fact that these mortgages are collapsing. Ralph?
There's another dimension to this, and that's the other deepening crisis that accompanies a crisis of speculative capital, the actual real-world daytime, nighttime consequences for the mass of humanity. Your New Statesman, How the Rich Starve the World. World cereal stocks are at an all-time low. Food aid programs have run out of money. Millions face starvation. yet wealthy countries persist with plans to use grain for petrol. Now, why we ask you to take time to acquire this series is because it makes the one-to-one relationship, the connection between the crisis of capital and the actual immediate consequences for working people, globally and notably within the United States. How the rich starve the world is a dimension of this series that you will be hearing about shortly, but brothers and sisters, that's the link. It's not just an abstract question of speculation and derivatives and a deficit based economy. It's not merely the enormous, obscene enrichment of executives who take literally billions of dollars in bonuses and in salaries and in stock options and in offshore funds. It's how the rich starve the world, how global grain stockpiles, as the New Statesman writes, on which all of humanity depends, are now perilously depleted. How cereal stocks have reached their lowest level globally for 25 years, according to Food and Agriculture Organization, while the population has increased. How the world has consumed more grain than it has produced for 7 of the past 8 years, and at roughly only 54 days of consumption, the lowest in historic record. How the president of the World Bank has warned that 100 million people are being pushed into starvation in an ever-increasing ratio. How consumers in rich countries are suffering. This is a crisis of such magnitude, brothers and sisters. Newsweek states that we'll be paying $6 a gallon for gasoline within a very short space of time, and that is but the little beginning. And in the Asia Times, as we discuss it in great detail in this series, quote, A Man-Made Famine by Raj Patel, published as well in The Guardian in London. Anyone who understands the current food crisis, Raj Patel writes, will be finding it hard to listen to the head of the World Bank without gagging. Zelik waxes apocalyptic as he writes about the consequences about the global surge in prices. But what it means is starvation, death in huge numbers, and a wave of food riots that is cresting across the planet. This is a series, brothers and sisters, that makes the realities of the capitalist system's nuclear collapse immediate, vivid, documented, and available to you. Please make it part of the furniture of your own intellectual argument and discussion and political mobilization. 212-209-2950. $100 for a series that will give you the information and the mobilizing equipment to do the political work that lies ahead of us. For you can be sure, brothers and sisters, a crisis of this magnitude can only be met by draconian measures by the ruling class. I just want to mention one thing to you, brothers and sisters. Here is an article in the Israeli newspaper Yedioth Aharonot. Israeli designs Who Killed Barack Obama t-shirts. Now, this is not a minor matter because a huge amount of money has been put into t-shirts and hoodies bearing the message Who Killed Barack Obama. And indeed, in the New York Times, the op-ed piece by Edward Lutvak, who is actually Miles Ignotis of the Defense Intelligence Agency, tells us that across the world, Islamicists are preparing to assassinate Barack Obama. Islamicists? Oh, because he's an apostate. What is an apostate? Someone whose father was associated with Islam, but who did not maintain their religious convictions. Therefore, they are obligated to kill him. Now, what is the meaning of this? Not that Barack Obama represents a threat to capital, but that the opportunity to murder one of their own and to impute it to maniacal demons, same pretext for 9/11, is the way a system meets a crisis it cannot resolve, by creating the conditions for martial law at home and for further military adventure abroad. That is the linkage between the crisis of capital, the deepening crisis, the assault upon our very survivability in this society, and the deepening crisis that compels capital to give up the formal protections, the constitutional rights, and to create the conditions, the architecture of the fascist state.
And that's why today there are two things that you must do. One, call 212-209-2950 and contribute to WBAI. And particularly, we'd like to provide you with our gift to you, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, to make what seems incomprehensible, overwhelming, understandable. Not just understandable, to make it so that you can articulate the issues and go out and organize effectively. Also, in terms of organizing, we'd like you to visit the NYC911initiative.org, pull down the petition for the New York 9/11 ballot initiative, or call the hotline 646-537-1755. As you know, we've been supporting the petition to get on the ballot a new investigation, a real citizens' investigation of the events of 9/11. And this is essential, so please pull down the petition, get people to sign it yourself. That's NYC911initiative.org. Meanwhile, call 212-209-2950. The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. It's a multi-series programming by Ralph and myself. There are four parts to the series. The initial program, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. Part two, The Specter of Systemic Collapse. Part three, The Regulatory Charade. That's a new crisis in the making. Why the propping up by the Fed is not going to work. Part four, the depth of the assault on working people. Right now in the newspapers, they're saying how Wall Street is getting an infusion of funds, and the funds are coming from governments across the world, not just private, rich private investors. They're coming from governments in the Arab world who are benefiting from this huge fake rise in the price of oil. And that's something we'll discuss on future Taking Aim programs, why the rise in the price of oil isn't really a question of supply and demand. And this is a huge infusion, but it is only a little tip. This is going to be the beginning of a whole series of collapse of the financial markets, and worst of all, a deepening assault on working people. And that is why WBAI is so critical to each and every one of us at this moment in history. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Here's the link, brothers and sisters. Financial speculators reap profits from global hunger. The United States spokesperson, Josette Sheeran, referred to a silent tsunami that plunges hundreds of millions of people on every continent into starvation. That underlies the New Statesman, the trading frenzy that sends prices soaring. That's the predicate for $6 gallon oil. That's the reason that Archer Daniels Midland, as we document in this series, has a 42% leap in quarterly profits. How the agricultural corporations are absolutely awash in billions of dollars of profits, of short-term profits, feeding on this crisis. You need the information, brothers and sisters. What is the link between the agricultural profits and the financial speculation and the mounting food crisis and the revolution of the hungry and the food riots that are sweeping the globe? What is the link between that and the DIA, the Defense Intelligence Agency's Edward Luttwak, openly in the United States newspaper of record, the New York Times, yesterday, stating that the Islamic terrorists will almost certainly assassinate Barack Obama? This is a call, virtually, for a crisis-resolving fake event like the assassinations of the Kennedy brothers. Of course, in a different dimension, the murder of Martin Luther King, but 9/11 itself, the relationship between created crisis, repression at home, and military adventure abroad to the crisis of capitalism as a system is intimate, immediate, with enormous consequences.
We talk about the disparity, how the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. Let's look what's happened in just the past 8 years. $4 trillion. Now, $1 trillion is an enormous amount of money. $1 trillion is the value of all the health care expenditures in the United States each year.
It's $1,000 a minute since the birth of Jesus. That's $1 trillion. Bear Stearns' collapse is keyed to $516 trillion of fake capital, fictive capital speculation in paper. That is the enormity of the starvation of the planet, the destruction of our infrastructure, and the inability of capitalism to sustain itself as a viable system, brothers and sisters.
$4 trillion in President Bush's first term alone were passed to the wealthy, the wealthiest households and large corporations, through tax cuts. 80% of that $4 trillion accrued to the wealthiest households and large corporations. And in his second term, a further $1 trillion passed to the wealthiest households and large corporations. That's $5 trillion. There has been such a growth in the wealth of the people, the wealthiest 1% of people in the United States. And it is this extra money that they use to fuel their speculative investments. It wasn't money that went into production. It wasn't money that went into increasing the steel production or in increasing the other productive forces within the United States. No, it is money that went into hedge funds, that is accumulation of speculative paper. Money, as Ralph said, where there's very little margin. And then they set up instruments that are guesses of what might happen to the price of beef, what might happen to the price of oil, what might happen to the mortgages, the mortgage market. They are gambling. These are gambling. And in basis of selling these gambling instruments, they would get reap 25% return, 30% return. But at the very base, at the very foundation of all these speculative instruments, these derivative instruments, there is some element of truth. And for these mortgage-backed securities, it was the home mortgages. And as it became more difficult for people because of losing their jobs, because of the increase in the price of the cost of living, because of the increase in the cost of their mortgages, because they were adjustable rate mortgages that ballooned up once the interest rates went up and they could no longer afford to pay for their homes, even though you had everyone in the family working and people not just working 40-hour weeks, people having two part-time jobs and sometimes three part-time jobs on top of their full-time job, or piecing together many part-time jobs. As it became impossible for people to pay their monthly expense on their mortgages, the foundation of this derivative market collapsed. And this is very important to understand. It's important to understand the interlocking network of all these financial institutions. 212-209-2950. The collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital, our gift to you for your donation to WBAI. Very important to understand the workings of capitalism, because if without this understanding, it is almost impossible to organize effectively. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
This crisis, brothers and sisters, about fictive capital, about the speculative economy, about the actual terminal condition of capitalism's collapse, is not a question of rhetoric, it's not a question of dogma, and far from it being any of that, it is not propaganda. It is meticulous empirical analysis of the realities of the world order under which we suffer, under which we live. A mounting food crisis and the revolution of the hungry emerges as a declaration of what the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and the Group of Seven, who convened in the shadow of this financial crisis, the worst since the Great Depression of the 1930s. How does this translate? Food prices in Haiti have risen by 40%. The cost of staples such as rice doubling in a day. The same story repeated in country after country, from Africa to the Middle East to South Asia and Latin America. In Bangladesh, on one day, 20,000 textile workers took to the streets over soaring food prices. The price of rice had doubled. The workers, who earn a monthly salary of $25 a month for their families, are facing starvation. In Egypt, workers are mobilizing over food prices that have rocked the textile center of Mahalla al-Kubra, north of Cairo. Hundreds arrested, the government sending police into factories. Brothers and sisters, it's Burkina Faso. It's Phnom Penh in Cambodia. It's the Ivory Coast, where President Laurent Gbagbo is chanting, "We are hungry, we are hungry, life is too expensive, you are killing us." That's the president of the Ivory Coast. Brothers and sisters, we lay it out. The data is there. The links are made. Be prepared. This crisis is only in its little beginning. We are faced with a systemic collapse. We need to prepare ourselves for a struggle. We need to be anticipating the repression that will be coming down. We have to understand, as Leon Trotsky wrote in his History of the American Revolution, the Russian Revolution, that's a nice slip, the masses are in a moment of sorting out. What did Trotsky mean? He meant that when the system begins its process of terminal decay and collapse, the masses register in their daily lived experience what is happening to them, and they are sorting it out, because when they begin to seize awareness that this system is condemning them to a hopeless no exit, they prepare for an enormous explosion of energy and meet people who understand what is happening, armed with the information, linking up with our constituents. The masses of our people are positioned to begin that struggle to displace those in power, to take control over these institutions, to make society our own instrument for improvement, for well-being, for social transformation. Those are the stakes. Those are the opportunities. And information is essential. Knowledge is essential. In beginning was the deed, said Rosa Luxemburg, but without information, without analysis, we are not armed to wage the struggles that lay ahead of us. That's why we urge you, brothers and sisters, avail yourself of this opportunity, this series, the data. It is yours for $100. It is for continued free speech radio, mobilization of our many, and documentation of the realities of the system under which we live. 212-209-2950.
212-209-2950, the collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital. While the U.S. newspapers, the bourgeois press, are trying to say that the crisis is over its hurdle and good times will be a-coming at some point, that is not what the international press is saying. The Financial Times, April 23rd. Regulator fears wave of bank failures. Collapses could rise above historical norms. That is the truth of the matter. 8,000 families a day are sliding into foreclosures as we speak. 233,000 properties are in some stage of default. This means, if you do the arithmetic, almost 3 million more homes will be lost in the coming year. 3 million homes. That's 3 million families dispossessed. According to analysts at Citigroup, $460 billion worth of adjustable mortgages are scheduled to reset this year. And this would raise the minimum payment for borrowers and increase yet again the number of anticipated foreclosures. Just in the last few months, repossessions rose 90%, according to RealtyTrack, a company that tracks foreclosure statistics. Brothers and sisters, please, with your contribution to WBAI of $100, we are providing you highly edited. I went through and I edited this series. It is so tight. It is so dynamic. You will not be able to hold on to your seats. You're going to be jumping up and down. You're going to be taking notes. You're going to be stopping, starting, replaying this over and over, and having all your friends and family listen. The collapse of Bear Stearns and the crisis of fictive capital. We have been receiving so many letters from people throughout the world telling us about the importance of this series and how it is the best thing they have read and heard about what is taking place with capitalism today. Please, put this in your library. Share this with your friends and families. $100 contribution to WBAI 212-209-2950. Step up to the plate. Show your support for Taking Aim and for WBAI. 212-209-2950. We're only playing small portions of this incredible series, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital. We have only a few more minutes left this morning. Please do not hesitate. Do not wait. Get on the phones now. 212-209-2950. Ralph?
Inflation hits the poor the hardest, says the Washington Post in a piece by Neil Irwin and Alejandro Lazo. Goods and services that Americans consumed were 4% more expensive per month. There's a huge divide in how much prices are climbing and between the basic items people need to live and get to work and those in which they can easily cut back when times are tight. The Washington Times reports that prices have risen 9.2% for groceries, gasoline, health care, other basics for middle-income family in a matter of days. We are faced with a crisis, brothers and sisters, that is deepening. This series is a documentation of that reality and a mobilization of our constituents to face the reality, arm themselves with the information, and prepare for the political tasks ahead. Brothers and sisters, 212-209-2950. There's a great deal more that we are going to be discussing, but which pertains to the series itself, because it's there. It's documented, it's particularized, and we are ready for the events ahead when we are armed with the information that equips us to meet the crisis.
We'll be back with you at 5 p.m. This afternoon. That's 2 o'clock on the East Coast. And please, those of you listening in worldwide, tune in again. This has been Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoen
and Maya Schoen. Again, 212-209-2950. For your contribution to WBAI, our gift to you, The Collapse of Bear Stearns and the Crisis of Fictive Capital, a four-part series.
And you can still call and dial and pick up this premium here at 212-209-2950. Once again, 212-209-2950. This is your opportunity to pick